When the combined team reported to the Great Hall the next morning, Brick surprised everyone by not bringing up the odd dinner-time debrief or all the unknowns ahead of them. Instead, he told the support team to keep doing what they were doing with their intel and surveillance. Bravo was expected to finish scouring through Stop's notes until they'd grouped all instances of the target mobs per color classification. It was a long and boring morning, but both teams were in a lot better mood than last night, and it showed. Multiple times while they worked, Hydina was overcome by the same sensation of being watched. She knew without a doubt that it was either the old woman or the old man, or both, watching her. But every time she looked up, there was no trace of either of them. Only once did she catch a glimpse of the back of the man's slacks and the heel of one soft brown loafer before it disappeared around a corner off the Great Hall.
Maybe they'll keep watching us, figure out we're not all that terrible, and finally get up the courage to come say hi.
It was a nice thought, maybe, but she seriously doubted that would happen.
Even though I feel like they're sneaking around to catch a glimpse of me specifically, they also give me the feeling who they are, and what they do has to always be kept secret. Except for me. And that doesn't make sense.
They were almost finished categorizing and lumping together the new mobs by color when lunchtime rolled around. Then the most exciting part of the day came right after their meal, when Bam finally started to lose his shit.
Fuck yeah! Done!
Good for you, asshole. What do you want, a fucking cookie?
Nah.
The bald operator interlaced his fingers behind his head and leaned back in his chair.
I'll just sit here and watch the rest of you keep slaving away. I think that tastes better.
The fuck? You're not tasting me.
What?
While Wilson tried to figure out what the giant operator was saying, nobody paid Bam any attention because they'd all been making the same kinds of noises while going through this kind of tedious work that was never explicitly listed under their job description.
Maybe you should go get the sergeant. He'll probably want to hear about all the mind-blowing patterns you found with...
He stretched over the table to peek upside down at Wilson's work.
Purple.
I'll tell Sergeant Briggs what I have to tell him when he asks me to tell him. Don't want to make the rest of you look like a bunch of slackers.
Bam's head twitched violently to the side, and he let out another growl.
Stop! Whoa, dude! I'm screwing around.
Fuck!
He swatted at something beside one ear, then the other, before pushing his chair violently away from the table.
What the hell's wrong with...
Don't! Just don't!
He clapped both hands over his ears and doubled over in his chair.
Fuck! It won't shut up!
Ooh, sounds like he caught what Grossman has. Magic's not contagious, right?
Chuck.
It was weird that she called him by his first name in front of everyone, but it was what popped out. Grossman knew exactly what she was wondering. With a nod, he returned his gaze to Bam, who kept groaning and was now slapping one of his ears.
What the hell's going on right now?
Fuck! That's too... Fuck! It's too... There's... No!
Grossman leapt to his feet.
It's so fucking loud. Way too fucking loud. I need a second.
Still shaking his head, he rushed across the Great Hall and disappeared down the hall to the library.
Hey, Moss. What's up with your man?
No clue. Bam?
He wouldn't look at her.
Briggs is in his room, right?
Maybe. Go give it a try.
He looks like he's about to explode.
Tim, can you hear me?
Before she could set a hand on his shoulder, he launched himself from the chair, staggered around the hall with his hands still over his ears, doubled over again.
Fuck, man.
He clapped a hand to his head as he stared at Bam.
Look at his face.
Bam, you need to breathe.
She wanted to get closer, but the guy had launched himself away from the table and the rest of the team for a reason. That didn't necessarily mean he still didn't need to remember basic bodily functions.
Hey!
His eyes looked like they were on the verge of popping out of his head.
fucking radio!
The dim lights mounted on the walls flickered, darkened, then flared back up to the full force of their soft glow. Then the alarm siren built into the touchscreen table at the far end of the great hall went off. It was a different alarm than the one that had sounded yesterday, for the incoming surveillance footage of the Blue 3 mob in the woods, which meant it stood for something else. So did the half dozen other klaxons and alarms and sirens, firing off first in the touchscreen table, then from what sounded like every single monitor and control console and piece of Hellion equipment on the long tables capable of making that kind of noise. The chaotic din made Badge clap her hands over her ears. Stop leapt toward the touchscreen table, where he fervently scrolled, tapped, and tried to get the noise to shut off.
Oh, shit!
Skim leapt from his chair and moved sporadically from one monitor to the next, typing desperately and trying to get the obnoxious noises to stop so anyone in the room could think again.
Somebody needs to start talking. First, I hear Bam's having a stroke, but it sounds like somebody broke all our shit.
One by one, the sirens and alarms shut off. Skim made it to the last one and switched off the noise. At least the gear wasn't freaking the hell out anymore, but the same thing didn't apply to Bam.
I didn't.
He shook his head fervently, completely out of breath and staggering aimlessly in a dizzy circle.
I didn't break it, Sergeant. I didn't.
Briggs eyed him up and down, then nodded once before taking off toward his disoriented operator, like he saw this kind of thing all the time.
Well, there's the stroke part right there.
Bam flinched when his sergeant put a hand on his shoulder, but Briggs tightened his grip to guide the guy out of the great hall and toward the library.
What happened?
Got twitchy as fuck, started screaming at himself.
Then he got up and looked like he was about to pop.
Briggs shook his head as he passed them all with a hand on each of Bam's shoulders.
All right. Who said something to set him off?
Nobody. We were working.
He said his brain was a radio.
That made Briggs stop, and Bam stopped too. When he looked up at her, there was so much relief and fear mixed in his eyes that she wasn't sure if it would help him or hurt him to keep going. But her sergeant had asked for an explanation.
Before all the alarms went off, he said it wouldn't shut up and that his brain was a radio.
Briggs stared at her for what felt like way too long. Then one of his eyes twitched.
Okay.
Without another word, he returned to leading Bam out of the great hall so the guy could at least get some peace and quiet in the small but cozy bedroom that was his for the foreseeable future.
Sergeant Briggs, there's something...
It can wait, soldier. My hands are full. Everybody back to work.
The sound of Bam murmuring something to the sergeant echoed from within the short hallway, but the words were unintelligible. Then a door in the library opened, then shut, and there was no other noise or sight of their team leader.
What the fuck was that?
He's never done that before.
Right. I thought Moss was the only one who broke shit with her magic.
He didn't break anything.
He clicked through yet another computer system.
Which is pretty insane because everything in this room should be smoking and sparking by now. It's not.
What were they doing then? Besides the alarms.
He looked up from the computer and met her gaze with wide eyes.
Translating incoming signals? Energy readouts? You know the shit we're looking for on a regular basis so Stop can stick it in his log? And you guys have the intel you need?
Sounds pretty simple.
I mean, yeah, the basic function of incoming information is simple, sure.
So why do you look like your brain's about to pop now?
Skim opened his mouth but couldn't bring himself to answer that question.
The touchscreen's the only piece of equipment here that accepts the energy readouts we're tracking. Or that has an alarm.
Bullshit. Everything in this room set off an alarm.
I know.
Damn. I mean, we knew Bam was good with the brain shit and everything. But now he's, what, literally a human radio?
He was the last to have his magic go nuts on him like the rest of us.
Hey, Moorfield. You guys like twins now?
What?
Yeah, but you're probably the evil twin. Bam makes tech do shit it shouldn't be able to do, and you fucking break it.
That made even Idina laugh, because nobody could deny the truth behind what was only half a joke.
I don't hear radio frequencies and incoming signals in my head. No wonder Chuck freaked out. That would drive anyone nuts.
Then her curiosity got the better of her, as it usually did.
What was all the incoming stuff he blasted to the systems that aren't supposed to take it?
Skim looked up from yet another monitor and tilted his head in concession.
6 new magic blips, plus a really fucking big one. Not something we've seen before.
Idina spun to face the rest of her unit. When she met Trigger's gaze, she grinned.
See? Something we've never seen before.
Figuring out what all the incoming signals meant and preparing to use them with the intel they already had turned out to be easier said than done. First, they couldn't officially start on anything before getting the green light from Briggs. Their team leader took an unexpectedly long time trying to talk Bam down in private, which meant that what Bam was going through was way rougher than the rest of his team had previously thought. Grossman only confirmed it when he finally returned to the Great Hall, wearing a sheepish smile and with his hands thrust deep into the pockets of his jeans.
Sorry, guys. Didn't mean to bail like that.
Nah, it's good, man. Missed a hell of a show, though.
No, I didn't.
Everyone else shrugged it off. After everything they'd been through together, nobody thought twice about his ability to pick up on what was happening in another room when he couldn't see or hear any of it. Physically, anyway. Idina left the extra bit of categorizing work she'd been looking over on the table and met Grossman in the middle of the Great Hall.
How are you doing?
Me? Nah, I'm good. Shouldn't have tried to look in his head like that when I did. That was a real dumbass move.
Hey, I'm the one who basically told you to do it. Or at least I would have if you hadn't, you know.
She gestured at her temple, and he broke into a small, uncertain smile.
Right. Well, I would have done it anyway, and I did. I shouldn't have. Not for, like, because I can't take it. That was his thing going on, not mine.
I don't think he's gonna hold it against you.
It was a poor attempt at a joke. Mostly because everyone was still rattled by watching Bam come more undone than they'd ever seen him, and no one had been able to do a thing to help.
You're okay, right?
Yeah, I'm good. More worried about Bam.
I know. Have you...
She pointed weakly in the general direction of the library.
I'm staying out. On purpose. Which is great to be able to do when there's so much shit floating around this place.
Clearly wanting to change the subject to anything other than himself, he pointed at the monitors on the long tables and all the other Hellion gear surrounding them.
What happened with the tech? I didn't get specifics.
Apparently Bam can make them do things they're not supposed to. We got half a dozen new hits from various surveillance sites. Plus a gigantic magical energy readout spike unlike anything they've seen so far.
She nodded at the Triple S soldiers who had so diligently gone back to work that they'd already finished sorting, storing, and disseminating the new intel to Bravo's operators. After another moment of putting two and two together, Grossman's smile widened, and he finally was able to meet Idina's gaze.
We didn't have to do anything insane to find the source after all.
That's what it looks like. Now we're waiting for Briggs to give the word.
Excellent.
At a glance, their next steps seemed simple, but Briggs didn't return to the Great Hall before working hours were up, and Bam made himself scarce for the rest of the night. Idina was finally able to get to sleep when she wanted, but she might have spent a little too much time sitting up and talking to the rest of her team about what they might have to rearrange and deal with now that Bam's magic had finally done what the rest of theirs already had. Through it all, Idina kept feeling like the little old couple who lived in this castle and cleaned up after so many foreign guests were still watching her. The next morning, Bam rejoined his team and looked like a completely different person, for the better. He didn't say anything about his episode, but they all knew what he was thinking and what it felt like. They'd gone through it themselves. 2 minutes after reporting to work in the Great Hall at 800 hours, both teams headed into the kitchen for another killer breakfast. Once they'd had their fill, it was time to put all their intel analysis into practice. And after half a day and the whole night to think about it, Sergeant Briggs had come up with a plan he felt good about. It wasn't what the rest of his team had expected.
We're not going after the source of that giant energy spike yesterday. Not until we've got a handle on all the other mobs out there first.
Seriously? Sergeant, we've got everything we need, right?
I know what we have, and I'm the one who gets to decide what we need. Thanks.
Briggs stared at Chandler until the enormous operator nodded, which seemed to take a ridiculous amount of time. Then he was satisfied enough to keep talking.
We've been here 60 hours, give or take. And all we've done is chart a few dozen target sightings with surveillance. Not to mention that a brand new Scottish mob attacked one of our operators and not the other way around.
Edgars closed his eyes and gritted his teeth. Everyone knew he'd argue that it hadn't been a real attack if given a chance.
If you ask me, that's way too fucking long to be sleeping under someone else's roof, eating someone else's food, using up someone else's electricity, and not having given a goddamn thing back in return. So, the people of the Highlands are getting a little extra from their friendly American Hellion team.
Bravo stared at their team leader in disbelief. Whether it was intentional or not, Grossman having opened their telepathic comms at that exact moment made it a lot easier to swallow their newest orders.
Jesus fuck, he's serious.
He's the one who's talking about already wanting to go home. Now we're spending even more time doing damage control when we already have a read on the massive mob spike.
Hey, if people here weren't so weird about their stuff, we could wash our own fucking dishes and give back that way.
There's no way he's prioritizing foreign community service right now. He's got some other reason he doesn't want to tell us.
Great. How about a little mind melding, Grossman?
I'm not melding anything with anyone unless they say go first.
So we have to fucking guess?
Or you could deal with not knowing like every other fucking soldier on the planet.
God damn it.
Through their entire conversation, the operators stared dutifully at their sergeant, who wasn't a stranger to the vacant look that passed over the faces of his team whenever they had to think a conversation instead of having it out loud. From the outside, the whole thing looked like a showdown between an NCO and his team.
There's something wrong with them, huh?
Shit hits the fan, I'm going under the table.
Yeah, and I'm going under you.
Save it for the wedding night.
Briggs unwrapped another piece of gum, looking from one operator to the next, then finally raised an eyebrow.
You done?
Done with what, Sergeant?
Come on, Bam.
Took it too far, bruh.
Just because your magic hit the fan yesterday doesn't mean you can say shit like that and get away with it.
Briggs hiked up his sleeve to glance at his field watch.
Whatever the consensus was, Bravo, I don't give a shit. We're doing this.
Then he focused his gaze on Bam and nodded.
For knowing I'm not an idiot, but saying shit like that like I am one, you get first dibs on the next recon mission. Meaning I tell you what to do, and you do it.
Sergeant?
That's what I thought.
Briggs turned toward the table and snatched up another stapled printout. But this one wasn't nearly as thick as the intel packets his team had been scouring for the last 2 days.
Today, we're starting with the mob locations closest to this base of operations. For obvious reasons, it's bad for business if any of these fuckers get too close. Beyond that, Lieutenant Beatty and I agree that taking on these mobs in an outward-moving ripple is going to be the most beneficial to the people who call this place home, and to us. There aren't a lot of them way out here, but that doesn't make them any less valuable, even to us.
What does that mean? Valuable to us?
Exactly what it sounds like. We have an incredible resource available to us. While all the tech and equipment and fancy shit Command loaded us down with out here is useful, you can't beat the personal touch. Am I right?
What the fuck is he talking about?
Idina blinked at her sergeant and hoped her thoughts weren't so clearly visible on her face.
Wait a minute. You want us to what? Canvass the locals?
More or less.
No offense to the people here, Sarge, but what the fuck are the locals gonna know about mobs?
Do you ken where the tales of banshees and wee kelpies and the Nuckalavi came from in the first place?
Everybody turned to look at him. A few operators glanced at Grossman for help, but he frowned and shook his head.
Not sure what you're trying to say there, Lieutenant.
Ugh, do none of you ken a thing? The fairy tales, pal. Monsters. Magic. You think the folk out here made it all up out of thin air and boredom?
After being here for the last 3 days, yeah, that would totally make sense.
Operators lowered their heads, trying to hide their amusement. Beatty smiled wider.
I can't always depend on your fancy gadgets to get a job done. You've already seen it with the magic of your own eye. Trust me. The folks out here ken magic and monsters when they see them. I wouldn't put any real stock in a wee bit of advice about milk saucers by the windy, though.
Super helpful, sir.
Bam and Grossman.
The sergeant looked at his cheat sheet.
You'll take the gold, too, in Ockmore. Not too far from here, so feel free to walk. We only have one driver and one bus.
And three horses.
Ponies, dude! Ponies!
Moorfield and Chandler. You get the green three in Dorney.
Of course they do.
Edgars and Wilson... There's a black one and purple two out in Fearnmore. Looks like they've been holding a little competition on which one of them can tear apart the most farmland in the least amount of time. Have fun.
Shit.
Trigger, you're with me. We got a nice shiny silver three today in a little fishing village called Kyler Ree. So that'll be fun.
That's a wee bit out there.
Sure is. But we're not going after a blue, so I'm pretty sure we won't have any directional issues getting there and back. What do you think?
Trigger bit her bottom lip and nodded stiffly.
Great. We're rewriting the terms of engagement today, meaning we have them. Each one of these locations you're going to has a vastly higher civilian population than we expected to be dealing with. We'll deal with it. Yeah, you're canvassing the locals, and I want everybody paying attention to what you hear and see. If you get a visual on your target, you're authorized to engage on site. Got it?
With civilians present?
With civilians present, if necessary.
Denny Fash. My lads will sort out any trochee after, if there is any.
Look at that. We got our own personal Scottish sweep team. Any questions?
There was a little concern the other day about a two-person team's ability to successfully combat mobs we don't know anything about, Sergeant. So if things go south...
They won't, Moorfield. Specialist Markle and I reviewed the analysis he ran on the energy output logs for each number classification.
When?
Whenever the hell I want. Turns out Scottish mobs aren't all that different than what we're used to if you're looking at it from an energetic level. Apparently. Anything with a one or two is going to be like catching a couple of leeches in your crosshairs.
And the threes?
Not any worse than one spinner on its own. In case you're wondering, no, I didn't randomly pick the towns or the types of mobs you're going after. I know it's easy to forget any one of us has individual strengths, but as your team leader, I'm the lucky son of a bitch who doesn't get to forget. Because of my skills and experience, I'm confident in your ability to handle your assigned targets, so you don't have to be. If you're not, I don't want to hear shit about it. Edgars, Wilson, you guys get a fun ride with Curly for the day.
Fantastic.
The rest of you get to walk. Trigger, you and I, well, we all know what you can do, and you know the drill.
She wrinkled her nose but stayed quiet.
Pick up a comms unit from Specialist Kilder on your way out. Yes, they're Hellion. No, we've never needed real comms before, but in case you haven't noticed, we're switching shit up. Bam, you don't get one.
Even Bam laughed a little, which was a good sign.
Move out, Bravo. We got a lot of ground to cover.
The operators all headed for the first long table, where Skim stood beside a black metal box with a hinged lid, which he'd already opened, in anticipation of handing out 7 comms units to 4 two-person teams.
If you can't get back here before 1700, you better have a damn good reason, and I better know about it in advance. That means before 1630 specifically, because I know some of you assholes need to know where the line is first.
Once he'd finished his final reminder, Briggs strode across the great hall toward Beatty. The two stood together and watched the simple, orderly process of the Bravo operators being handed their monster-fighting gear by soldiers who'd been all but non-existent in the U.S. Army 6 months ago.
Shit gets weird when you're having fun.
Once she grabbed her new comms unit from Skim and had the earpiece firmly fitted, she went back to the round banquet table to wait for Chandler. The comms earpiece settled in the giant operator's ear looked more like he'd gotten a weird piercing in the wrong place, but she didn't say anything about it. Most things looked odd on Chandler, except for the screamer and his magically altered Screamer 2.0, which seemed like an incredibly odd firearm to carry in the open in the middle of a small town in the Highlands. But that was part of the gig today.
You ready for this?
Fucking dream come true.
They headed toward the library and their rooms, where they'd finally break out the new Hellion gear they'd received to use against mobs. Instead of using it to impress Idina's old unit members and Bravo's new support attachment. After pulling out another warm layer to fit under her jacket, then wrapping herself up in a scarf, Idina felt a little ridiculous, heading out into a civilian population dressed like this and toting the disassembled pieces of her updated weapons kit in various pockets.
We're a couple of tourists wanting to hear about local legends, right? Jesus, I hope the Loch Ness Monster doesn't take up all our time.
You heading out?
Yep, got everything I need right here.
Nah, not everything.
Okay, fine. What did I miss? You can't do that.
You're right. That totally failed.
Well, it didn't pump me up to go after this green two with Chandler in a town called Dorney.
That was totally my bad.
Yep. Don't be a total idiot out there, okay?
Sure. Don't pull any underwater almost dying tricks either, yeah?
Deal.
Jesus Christ, you guys. Get a room.
We have 2.
Don't make me throw you out of this castle.
Hey, if that'd get me to Dorney even faster, I'm totally down. You could throw me as hard as you want since I'm the only one who can heal myself.
Tempting.
Even if I told you I'm kinda being serious?
Sure. Then I get to tell your boyfriend how fun it was to break every bone in your body before we got to Dorney. That'll go over well.
My boyfriend, huh? Weird when someone else is the first one to say it. Everybody likes a good story, right?
The walk from their operations base in the castle to Dorney felt a lot longer than it was. That probably had something to do with the cold, damp, dreary weather and the fact that going after a single mob, sighted and logged in a tiny Highland town when they were in Scotland for the source, wasn't all that inspiring. Walking into Dorney didn't exactly help either. Understandably, most locals prefer to spend their time indoors, which made talking to anyone like they were supposed to that much more difficult. What wasn't difficult was catching civilians' attention wherever they went. Walking around with, or as, a 7-foot broad-shouldered man tended to do that. Engaging those civilians in conversation, however, was something else entirely.
We're here for a few weeks, and we've been looking for local stories about magic.
Of course, that didn't get them a lot of willing participants. Neither did saying they were Americans whenever someone asked. And for the first hour in Dorney, their record for the longest conversation was 3 minutes in a hat store. The man in his 50s who owned the place did all the talking and was remarkably upset when Chandler finally told the man he wasn't interested in a new hat. Seeing Idina next to her enormous mission partner, as small as she was and still looking a good deal younger than 19, made people even less interested in them, or at least more interested in avoiding them altogether. Multiple small groups of locals braving the weather they were used to, cross the street to walk to their cars or different shops down the street to avoid passing the pair of undercover operators.
Lunch?
Might as well. You think somebody might talk to us if we leave a big enough tip?
I have no idea. Do people tip in Scotland?
Despite being on a day mission to hunt down a mob on their own, playing out their roles as undercover tourists was the easiest part of the day, simply because that was exactly what they were. Everybody seemed to know it the second they laid eyes on the small young woman bundled up in multiple layers and the gigantic man in his early 20s walking beside her. At least they still got table service in the pub.
Awesome. More haggis.
Don't tell me you're tired of the stuff already.
No. You know what I'm tired of? Not getting any closer to pinning our actual goal.
She'd almost said target, which was on the list of things not to do when sitting in a pub that only had two other patrons, both of whom sat at the bar and were already well into their pints. Lowering her voice, Idina looked around the mostly empty room and leaned forward over the table.
That's what's making today so much fun. Hell, haggis it is then.
She dropped her menu on the table and sat back against the hard booth. They had to wait for someone to take their order, and that made the time stretch out unendingly.
This is weird, right?
He lowered his menu to the table and fixed her with a raised eyebrow.
Sounds like you're getting itchy.
Yeah, no shit. I can't even tell if I'm hungry or
Morning.
Not.
Morning. What can I get you?
The middle-aged man with a pockmarked nose and a slightly stained, full-sized apron around his waist seemed to show up in front of their table out of nowhere. But his smile was genuine enough, and he tipped his head toward them as if they were all in on some private joke.
Hi, I'll have the haggis lunch.
Aye? You've had it before?
Only in the Highlands.
Aye.
He found that funnier than it probably should have been, but Idina kept smiling and waiting for him to calm down enough that he could take the rest of their order.
For you, lad. A braw one, you know.
Neither knew what he meant, but Chandler handled it well enough.
Haggis for me, too. Plus, 2 pints of whatever you think goes best with it.
A pint goes best with everything, lad. But wouldn't it try to toss them both down at once?
One for each of us.
Oh, of course. Just need a wee peek at your passport, lass, before I bring it out to you.
Really? Okay. What's the age limit on pints here?
18 if you aim to get bloated. A wee 16 if you order a meal, which you have.
Good to know.
The man nodded over and over as he turned to the ID part of her passport, and when he flipped to that second page, he froze.
Moorfield.
That's me.
She smiled up at him, instantly on the alert when she saw the small frown flickering across the man's brow.
Aye, 'tis. Where you frail, lass? Where's home?
North Carolina in the States.
She zipped her passport back up in a pocket that fortunately didn't have any disassembled gun parts.
But my family's from here. The Highlands, at least.
Aye. And Moorfields, eh? I didn't ken that one. You ken whereabouts?
Yeah, or at least I know one of the family properties. The place was called Tig Glion.
The man's eyes widened, and a crooked grin spread across his features.
Aye, the bonny wee castle over the hill. That's Mirden land there.
Yep. Before they packed up, moved to America, and changed the name.
Aye, of course. Loads of folks did that. Now, no, you're back to visit the old places, eh?
Something like that.
Even if Chandler hadn't subtly reminded her, she knew an unexpected opportunity when she saw one.
We're out here trying to collect a few stories. You know, to help put some pieces together about my family before they left Scotland. My grandfather used to tell me a whole bunch of stories about magic and monsters when I was little. But I never really got the chance to ask him more once I grew up. I figured maybe coming back to the source would help.
Did you know? Aye, twill at that, lass. We got plenty of tales for you. All right, Fergus.
The server looked over his shoulder to shout at one of the two other patrons drinking at the bar.
We got us a Mirden lass over here. For America, can you hob it?
The man on the left hunched over his pint, obviously Fergus, mumbled something incoherent before knocking back the rest of his drink and slamming his glass down on the bar.
Aye. Fergus has tales to last a lifetime for you. Aye, but a haggis ale first. I'll send him room back when you're ready.
Thanks.
She grinned and watched the man scurry back toward the bar in the kitchen behind it to put in their very simple orders. On the way, he picked up a rag off the bar and used it to smack the back of Fergus's head. The man at the bar hardly seemed to notice, but grumbled something else nobody could understand.
Huh. Colonel McBlair named his private military contractor company after some old family land out here?
Yep.
Should have started with that the second we rolled into town.
Yep.
Idina was proud of herself for having figured out the magic combination of conversation pieces to finally get what they needed to move forward in their little side mission. One piece of what the pub owner had said stuck with her and wouldn't let her go.
They know my name out here. Or at least the Muirden name. He said it like Tiglion Estate still exists.
Their lunch was delicious. The pints were even better. And once they paid their bill, with a hefty tip, whether or not that was customary here, the pub owner waved them into the back with him, smiling and nodding the whole time.
Give him a minute or two to warm up to you. Fergus is a wee bit wary of strangers, do you ken? But I told him here you are. Might help.
We really appreciate it.
Fife shoved a swinging door that opened into a dark, damp cobblestone alley, glistening with dew and overgrown with mold in the sunless corners and crevices. At least it didn't stink, which she would have expected from the stack of full trash bags outside the door, and maybe even from the man hobbling aimlessly up and down the alley and muttering to himself.
Then I thank me till after you've had him blather.
He stepped back inside and let the door swing shut behind him with a solid thunk.
Yeah, that didn't sound ominous.
It's fine.
She walked forward down the alley toward Fergus, who now turned in a slow circle and peered at the cracks in the walls, mumbling to himself.
Excuse me.
The man kept turning in slow circles, and as she watched him, he looked more confused and lost than drunk.
Fergus?
Hey, who the hell are you?
The Muirden lass.
It felt ridiculous to refer to herself like that, but if this was how they were going to get their stories from the locals, this was how they were going to get them.
We're asking around after a few stories here. Local stories. Your friend inside told us to come to you.
Fife sent you?
Yep.
She nodded fervently, seriously hoping that the pub owner's name was Fife. Either way, talking about it seemed to settle Fergus' nerves, and at least he stopped spinning in circles.
You want tales, aye? About the monsters?
If you have any.
If and I? Oh, no. I got tales to keep you up all night. Tales to make you tear your locks out.
Fergus scratched his head and looked Idina up and down.
Muirden lass, you say?
Yeah, that's me.
Well, then you'll ken exactly what kind of terrors I'm talking about, won't you? Aye. Terrors are here in town to this day.
Really?
Her sidelong glance at Chandler couldn't have been interpreted as anything but a told you so.
We'd love to hear them.
Fergus spun violently toward her, his eyes wide and shimmering with the kind of intense lucidity that often got mistaken for madness.
Dinna lie to me, lassie. There's he or to love, only to tell. If that's all you want, I'll do it for you.
Okay, I have no idea what he's saying, but I really hope that means yes.
Gay well, then. Listen closely, and dinna interrupt. Nobody likes a rude listener, you ken?
Idina and Chandler nodded. Then Fergus made them stand there in the cold, damp alley for another 3 minutes before he finally began. When he finally started talking, his voice had completely changed. It deepened, carrying a warning growl with every word rolling off the man's tongue in an accent thicker than any they'd heard. For the first few minutes, it was impossible to understand what he said, but they'd already agreed not to interrupt. Then Fergus started gesticulating wildly, tossing his hands in the air and shouting with every other word, until he looked and sounded every part the mad drunkard two tourists had stopped to humor at their peril. Eventually, he started to slow down for what seemed like dramatic effect, then stopped and stared at his rapt listeners. Idina blinked slowly, hoping it looked like amazement instead of complete cluelessness.
But don't a fash yourself. Just been caught. Locked away for the last year. My cousin caught it on his own, if you can hope it. Trap the monster somewhere, it'll ne'er escape. And the town's better for it. You can tell that, Muckle.
Wow.
Aye.
Fergus nodded gravely. It took Idina a moment longer to figure out exactly what he'd been saying. A monster, terrorizing Dorney for months, stealing supplies, overturning carts and wagons, making fresh meat and produce wither and rot with a single touch. Now, apparently, it was locked away somewhere.
Where did he put it? Your cousin?
You didn't want the gang there, lassie. Trust me.
Just to see the place with our own eyes. It's easier to imagine how terrible this thing is when you're looking right at its prison.
Fergus stepped closer and squinted at her.
You're not feared of Muckle, are you?
She slowly shook her head and let herself smile a little.
No, it takes a lot to scare me.
Aye, that's what I thought.
The man scratched his head, then nodded north despite the alley walls blocking everything else around them from view.
Warehouse, up the wind. Right behind the yellow bricks. Two giant iron doors hold the creature bin. But dinna titch. If that thing gets out the day, I will ken exactly what to blame for the crazies running around and screaming their heads off.
It wasn't exactly easy to pick out what he was saying, especially because his storytelling voice and ridiculously thick accent hadn't eased off, even though he'd finished his tale.
Warehouse up the road, behind the yellow brick, two giant iron doors.
Fergus nodded, his eyes growing even wider.
Dunna titch.
Don't touch. Got it. Love the story, Mr. Fergus. This is exactly what we were looking for.
Have a great day.
Mister. Mister.
Fergus shook his head and kept up his muttering and shuffling gait up and down the alley. Only once they'd stepped out of the alley and walked another block down the winding cobbled road did the operators talk about what they'd discovered.
Looks like the guy kicked himself out of the pub.
He didn't look crazy or drunk. A little hard to understand, maybe, but not crazy.
You know what? You can say I told you so once we find this warehouse. He basically gave us directions to pass the yellow brick road, so I'm still not convinced his story was anything but a story.
Well, the surveillance site that picked up the green two is in Dorney somewhere. If there is a monster that's been locked up in a warehouse for the last year, the cameras should be set up right next to it.
That's assuming our support team had any idea what they were looking for and didn't mount the cameras on a wall over a dumpster or something.
Playfully rolling her eyes, Idina shook her head and didn't bother saying anything else.
They could joke about it all they wanted, but if Fergus's story were true, hunting down the Scottish mobs would turn out to be a lot easier than they'd thought.
So was finding the aforementioned warehouse. A 6-foot brick wall separated the backs of two neighboring properties, and the whole thing had been painted a bright canary yellow. It might have even been the brightest, most colorful thing in the old fishing village, and there was no mistaking that this was exactly where they needed to be. Then they rounded the corner of the yellow brick and found what looked like an ordinary storage garage, but with two enormous iron doors at its entrance. The handles on those doors had been thoroughly wrapped multiple times in thick metal chains, which were fortified by not one, but three padlocks and a crowbar stuck through both handles just in case.
Damn. Well, if they can catch monsters, they sure know how to keep them in one place.
Yeah, but we know how to kill them. Never really had to break chains and padlocks before, which is kind of weird when I think about it.
Well, don't break anything yet, huh?
Idina turned in a slow circle, scanning the back of the yellow brick wall and the eaves of the buildings around them, for any sign of the Hellion surveillance cameras or other equipment sending magical spike readouts back to their base in the castle.
We still haven't found any proof. Oh, yep, there it is.
So now I get to break stuff. Keep an eye out, huh?
Yeah, I love playing lookout. Hey, will you hold on a second? We're authorized to take down mobs in front of civilians if necessary. Pretty sure that doesn't include a free pass for breaking and entering in front of civilians.
Chandler waited for her to double check that they were alone. Idina found it surprisingly difficult to focus her magic on penetrating those iron doors. It took longer than normal, too, and she had to close her eyes to focus on seeing whatever was beyond the outside of the building.
Jeez, feels like the first time I ever saw through something solid. Is that the doors, the mob, or something else?
Finally, her magic pulled up a shimmer of something inside the warehouse that wasn't a human shape. To be sure her magic was working, she turned to peer through the yellow brick wall and into the building on the other side. Three human figures outlined in glowing green lit up in her vision, and she nodded.
Okay, there's something in the warehouse. No civilians, though.
Great, so now you can play lookout.
Chandler took another step toward the chained and bolted doors, then paused to shoot her a quick look.
You might want to back up.
Yeah, you always say that.
She still backed away from the iron doors to avoid any potential metal projectiles. Then she turned to scan the little sliver of the street that was visible between the yellow brick and the front of the warehouse.
All clear.
Yep.
Two padlocks clinked to the cobblestone, followed by the crowbar.
You couldn't, like, keep it down a little?
You said it was clear.
Yeah, but not if people can hear you breaking into a warehouse from the opposite side of town.
Chandler rolled his eyes. Then the last padlock crumbled in his fist before he tore apart the chains like a kindergartner had made them out of construction paper. They clinked to the ground as noisily as the rest of the homemade locks. Idina briefly turned to shoot him an exasperated look, but he either didn't notice or flat out ignored her.
Can't expect the literal Hulk to be quiet and gentle, I guess. Wait.
An old beat-up car chugged up the hill toward them. The driver was an old woman who had to be at least in her 70s, hunched forward with both hands on the wheel and squinting straight ahead up the road. She didn't turn her head to gaze down the side streets she passed. Then she was gone.
Okay, go.
The last chain broke in Chandler's grip and clinked to the ground. Then he grabbed a handle of one iron door and gave it an experimental tug.
Locked from the inside, too.
All right, well, just make sure you...
Two of them flew back and hit the yellow brick wall behind him. When the enormous operator turned back to see her deadpan stare, he waggled his eyebrows.
Yeah, I'll just...
Jesus! Quick sweep. Let me know if you need...
Sure.
Then Chandler slipped through the wide space that was a narrow crack for someone his size and disappeared into the darkness. Idina tapped her earpiece to double-check that it was on and fully functional. Apparently, he did too, because now she could hear him breathing in her ear.
See anything?
Not in the dark, but I think... Wait.
Is that it?
Give me a sec, I just...
Shit!
Idina spun away from the road and took off running toward the pried open door, her fists already surrounded by glittering green circles.
No!
She skidded across the uneven street, slowed down and pivoted toward the door, only to stop short as Chandler stepped out of the warehouse.
What?
The inside of the warehouse was completely quiet again. A splatter of neon green goo covered Chandler.
Is that?
She didn't know how to ask the question because it was so far beyond the realm of either of their experiences. Chandler looked down at his fist, also splattered with goo, and dripping thick neon green globs onto the cobbled street. Then his gaze flicked up to meet Idina's.
I think so?
That's not very encouraging.
Yeah. Encouraging isn't exactly the word I'd choose either. Dead might be closer, though.
He sent extra goo flinging across the narrow road toward the yellow brick wall.
Seriously?
Chandler stepped aside, frowning and staring blankly at the road at the end of the narrow side street before gesturing toward the broken iron door for her to have a look. Unsure whether to laugh or give him a quick once-over for any injuries, maybe especially in the head, Idina forced herself toward the warehouse door instead. Sure enough, it was completely dark inside, and the muted daylight through the thick gray clouds illuminated only two footprints on the floor in glowing neon green. On the far side of the warehouse, the same luminous goo clung to the wall, a pile of toppled boxes and storage crates, and all across the floor. After taking it all in, she looked over her shoulder at him with wide eyes.
What did you do?
Sucker punch.
Just one?
As far as I know.
She glanced at the glowing footprints on the floor again, then saw her partner's earpiece that had fallen out during the brief and mortal scuffle for the Green 2 mob. She picked it up, wiped the droplets of goo off on her jacket, then headed toward him and handed over the earpiece.
Okay, yeah. Dead works.
Dead works. Easy is so fucking boring.
She turned and walked toward the street.
Well, yeah, but it's easy. Now we get to call it a day.